Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
Time for the week that was on Classic Business, joined by our regular raconteurs and market sage, Warwick Lucas from Vanani, and our strategist, Professor Raymond Parsons from NWU Business School. Gents, let's get into it. One of those weeks where NVIDIA's numbers make you wonder if we're living through an industrial revolution on CapEx, and at home we've got a Reserve Bank trying to midwife that 3% inflation. But I thought a very encouraging MPC statement. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Warwick, NVIDIA, let's start there. $57 billion US dollars in quarterly revenue. That's quarterly revenue. It's up 62%. Jensen Huang basically says there's no bubble. What bubble? We're in the early stages. From your vantage point, do the numbers reflect a genuine AI investment supercycle or the late cycle blow-off phase of this CapEx mania that's been financed by debt, hype, and a lot of circular financing?
Right. Well, good evening, Michael, to you and the listeners. I think it's not an easy bull market to just round up and bag it up and say, right, it's this or it's that. The bull market you describe, we go back to the numbers you mentioned there, 50-odd billion that makes up the quarterly turnover. Contrast that to the 4-odd trillion market cap. I mean, you can see you're talking about a thoroughly heroic price-to-sales ratio. But of course, you're going to have ongoing sales of AI-related chips. And clearly, it's in a market-leading position, which for the next few years at least, it is likely to hold. But I mean, even the most stunning CapExes, to actually ram that up to justifiable rolling earnings is going to be, I suppose we could say we hope for the world that the productivity benefit comes through and it gets realized. But it seems to me a bit of a push. At least we can say, unlike the 1998 tech fallout, there are big companies behind this with very real earnings. Although, I mean, obviously there is going to be massive earnings attrition because of the huge CapExes. And while perhaps accounts are fine for now and are clean and so on, I expect that in the fullness of time, as this bull market matures, there will be fiddling with accounts, there will be overcapitalization instead of expensing, and ultimately it will end in tears. But I think for now, there's enough appetite. You know, as the old saying goes, you know, markets can remain silly or not very sane long after your balance sheet is drawn down. If you don't want to participate, don't short it, just step to one side and let the bus go on. There are actually quite a lot of playable themes anyway.
Yeah, because that momentum, as you say, can steamroller you as the market remains irrational longer than you can remain solvent. I do worry, though, just staying with you for a second longer, Warwick, about what we're seeing in the circular financing realm of things. Because you see NVIDIA invest tens of billions into OpenAI and Anthropic, who then buy NVIDIA chips, which inflates NVIDIA's forward bookings to $500 million US dollars. How comfortable are you with this circular ecosystem between chip makers, hyperscalers, and the AI labs?
Well, I think the most important thing is how much money have they got and who's going to run out first? So the answer partially is they've all got a hell of a lot of money, even including OpenAI. I mean, they've done quite a lot of fundraising at some quite heroic valuations. I mean, I believe that's probably one of the largest unicorns we've ever seen in the form of OpenAI, that is. I think it's north of 500 billion market capitalization. And, for the time being, I suppose they've got money to burn. Yeah. How long can they do it? Well, we'll see.
No one can tell me who their auditors are. And apparently Michael Burry has been trying to sniff it out on X. And obviously they're a private company. They don't have to disclose everything. But it's very strange that you can't even get a handle on who OpenAI's auditors are. All very interesting. Raymond, I want to bring you in because it was quite interesting. There's actually a link to this in the Saab's MPC statement. We had that 25 basis point cut. It seemed to me to be a markedly different tone in the statement. It seemed quite optimistic about the outlook, things being balanced and actually risked to the upside on the growth forecast. That was revised upwards. But the governor warned openly about a potential global AI bubble and spillovers to emerging markets if valuations correct. Do you think there is a risk that we are now potentially cutting into global froth or cutting despite it? How do you read the MPC?
Well, hi, Michael. Look, I found that statement very encouraging because it really built on a number of recent positive developments, including the trend in inflation and so forth, which created the space now for the MPC to say, look, we can cut by another 25 basis points. I think that's the first positive point. The second is you cannot, although we may be sensitive to the global uncertainties, the important thing is to build our own resilience and to create the buffers that enable us to deal with any fallout, should there be any. And I think we are in a slightly stronger position than we were 6 months ago to be able to deal with that. The second point is that to also link the decision to the commitment now to a 3% inflation target, bear in mind that our real interest rates are still high even after today by global standards. But nonetheless, as we move towards the 3%, there's going to be flexibility, which was reflected in the statement that we have a band, it's going to be phased in, and we're going to be moving over the next 2 years. I think those are all positive features. So I think this is another building block towards looking forward towards next year being a somewhat better economic year. In fact, I would almost be so bold as to say, let's put the issue of inflation aside and ask ourselves now, what more must we do about growth? Because one of the points made in the statement today was, yes, we think we're going to have better growth prospects, but they're not enough. And secondly, it's being driven more strongly by consumer spending and investment, fixed investment, not the financial markets, not the bond markets, but fixed investment is lagging. And that's the important challenge. That monetary policy cannot in itself put right. So what we are doing today is a necessary condition, but not a sufficient condition for us now to concentrate on getting growth at least in line with what the medium-term budget policy statement was assuming. But we must even try to do better because the margin for error on the growth front is not big.
On that point, and Warwick, to bring you in to something that Hendrik du Toit of 91 cautioned about at their results earlier this week, his only concern with this new target of 3%, obviously with the tolerance band of 1% either side, is what happens when we do start to achieve higher rates of economic growth in South Africa and we start to reach critical constraints because capacity has been hollowed out over the last 15 years. And what happens when you reach constraints like that? Well, then prices tend to rise at a much faster rate. So the concern seems to be now that if we do start to get growth going, that 3% target might become unachievable. How do you read it?
Michael, at this stage, I think it's a bit soon to tell. I think certainly it's very valid to point out that we have indeed been trying to snuff out inflation in an economy with a supply side problem, which means that you run the risk that you haven't snuffed it out sustainably as soon as you start trying to fire that economy up. So he's not wrong to raise that. It is an important point. And frankly, the only way that we can feasibly deal with it is basically to run up against it in the field, so to speak. But at the same time, we need the cost of capital to come down. And if the cost of capital comes down, the chance of getting some proper reinvestment in this economy and to deal with some of these supply side issues is also very important. So I think we might be trying to sort of square the circle. To be honest, I don't really fully know. But I wouldn't, I would simply treat it as an important possibility, but I wouldn't call it a deal breaker. No way.
Let me, if I could come in here, Michael, just to build on that, just to emphasize, let's worry about what is now important. We are battling to get this economy going. We've got an inflation framework in place. We've got a respected and a credible central bank that will do what is necessary. We know that the global research on moving to a lower inflation target has emphasized gradualism and flexibility and phasing in. That appears to have been the note struck today by the governor. Let's accept that framework and say, what must we now be worrying about? We're worrying about getting this economy moving, because one of the key factors that will improve and hinges on that is the fiscal outlook. That's a very narrow margin that you are dealing with there. So we want, for employment, fiscal, and a whole lot of other reasons, to get the real economy moving faster. So let's worry about future inflation when it arrives and deal with it. But the important point that was singled out, I'm less worried about the private sector and its pricing. I'm more worried, as the governor himself mentioned, one of the risk scenarios was, what if administered prices blow us off course? Well, that shows that this issue needs the alignment of other policies, whether on the cost front or on the growth front, in order to get the higher and stable growth that we want. And I think that's where we've got to go. So I'm not going to come back to my point. I'm putting worries about inflation on one side for the moment and saying we've got to get this economy moving, because there are social and economic factors that go beyond monetary policy.
Raymond Parsons excellently made point that. Thank you very much, from the Northwest University Business School, and Warwick Lucas, Private Clients Portfolio Manager at Vunani, with your week that was here on Classic Business.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.